Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to the Julia Hartley Brewer Daily. If you've missed any of my talk radio breakfast show, don't worry. We've put some of the punchiest bits of this morning's show into a bite-sized podcast, the Julia Hartley Brewer Daily. Enjoy.
Online, on DAB, and on the Talk Radio app. Talk Radio.
Right now, well, let's talk about that and many other topics with the Minister of Local Government and Regional Growth, Simon Clarke, who joins us now. Good morning to you, Minister.
Good morning, Julia.
Good morning. I'm going to come back to the issue of the Tory MP who's not been suspended, but I know more people right now are concerned about whether or not in a month's time their kids are going to be able to go back to school in England. Of course, in Scotland, children will be going back in just about a week's time, but very different term times. But the plans seem to be up in the air a little bit at the moment, although the government seems to be sending out a message. It's definitely going to happen. But a new report in The Lancet today, a mathematical model is saying that the... there are big question marks over the test and trace system, whether or not it's up to scratch to prevent a second wave coming about as a result of all our kids going back to school. How convinced are you that first that schools will be able to come back full time for all pupils?
Schools absolutely will be coming back full time for all pupils in September. That's something which is a total priority for the government here in England, and I'm sure it's shared by the devolved nations as well. We are absolutely clear that the impact of children missing so much of their education is enormous and has multi-year consequences for their life chances. It is therefore absolutely vital we have a good test and trace system in place to support that and the wider return to normality that we are seeking. And we do have a system which is making huge strides now. 184,000 people have been contacted by Test and Trace since it was set up. 184,000 people who might otherwise have been spreading infection throughout our society. So whilst there's further to go, and we totally accept that this is not the end state and there's always more to learn, it is good progress and it is supporting the changes that we need to see.
Well, there's no doubt there is progress. And yesterday we were talking about this sort of game-changing test that could be done and not invasive, doesn't need a medical procedure, medically trained people to carry it out. And you can just have a machine that's on site, takes 90 minutes. That may well be absolutely crucial for making sure we can get tests done quickly, schools, workplaces, care homes and the like. But there is this concern, as reported in the Lancet study, that the current rate at which we are tracing contacts and that those contacts are actually isolating isn't going to be enough. Once we've got kids back at school, once their parents go back to work, many of them on public transport, that we are going to see a number of different factors that are going to drive an increase in the virus. Are you convinced, are those in government convinced, that enough measures are in place and that that test and trace regime, which is, yes, improving, but is improving at a good enough rate that we can follow many other European and Asian countries in getting our kids back to full-time school without a second wave resulting, which will leave them closing again?
Now, we are confident that this system is the right one and that it's strong and getting stronger. And I pay tribute to everyone involved, both in helping to design it and to operate it. There is further work to do. We know that. We want to get the numbers up as high as we possibly can. And certainly to all listeners, if you are contacted by the test and trace service, it is really vital that you do self-isolate if you're advised to do so. We reach 80% plus of those who test positive, and of those we reach 75% of their close contacts. That's obviously something that we're learning about all the time, the best time of day to contact these people, whether there should be physical follow-up of those we can't reach on the phone. Those are the kind of refinements that we're always interested in learning about as we go. But this is something which, when you think that no one envisaged this literally just a few weeks ago, we shouldn't beat ourselves up too much over the fact that it's not the end state yet. We are testing more than almost anywhere else now.
Now, perhaps a lot of people are pointing out we should have been doing it a lot earlier and we'd be doing a lot better. The trouble is with asking people to do the right thing and getting, you know, make sure you get yourself tested, make sure you isolate, is asking people to do the right thing has a different cost for different people. I can work from home and still get paid. You can not work at all and still get paid as an MP. You don't have to turn up for 1 minute a day and you can still be paid. You'll still be paid as a government minister. Thank you very much. There are millions of people, lots of people listening right now, who won't get paid a penny. They won't be entitled to sick pay. They won't be entitled to anything else. But they're just going to have no work for a couple of weeks while they isolate. You can understand why a lot of people want to do the right thing, but they simply can't afford to. They've got rent to pay, mortgage to pay. They've got kids to feed.
Well, in all cases, obviously, we'd urge employers to take a considerate and compassionate approach to people in this situation. I think that's part of the wider social.
Well, why don't you require them to do so?
There is a wide range of support in place as well for people who find themselves in this situation. If somebody, for example, needs immediate access to finance, then Universal Credit, the advanced payment system, it can make payments incredibly quickly now to make sure that no one goes without. And that system has stood up brilliantly over the last few months. The fact that Universal Credit has been able to flex to a number of people who have needed financial support is a considerable success.
But hold on a minute. Those people who've been earning for the last week, they're not going to be eligible for Universal Credit advanced loans unless they're actually accepted on Universal Credit. These people don't want to be on Universal Credit. They want to be out working. They want to be supporting their families and paying taxes.
I quite agree. We all want them to be out there doing just that. I mean, look, there's no one in government takes any relish from this situation. It is a really difficult bind that we find ourselves in. And we have put hundreds of billions now into the economy as part of our effort to make sure that we maintain some measure of forward momentum at such a difficult time. There's no one in government denying that this is a really, really challenging situation. Okay. What we're trying to do is set the right structures in place so that we can indeed protect the public and get back to greater normality.
Well, this is it. We've got this difficult sort of pull and push factor going on here, haven't we? Because at one point you've got, you know, the Eat Out to Help Out plan. We've got the started yesterday. We've got the government urging civil servants to come back, schools to come back, everyone back in their offices. And at the same time, big warnings, almost, you know, it's almost like the left hand and the right hand don't know what they're doing. Big warnings about a second wave. Is there any evidence of this second wave? We had 9 more deaths yesterday with coronavirus. We don't know whether it was of coronavirus because we can no longer trust the death data from Public Health England. 938 new confirmed cases, which is a 6-week high. But as you say, we're doing a lot more testing. And if you look at cases per number of tests done, actually the figures remain steady. Other than these very localised spikes in areas where people haven't been observing social distancing, is there any evidence of this second wave that we've all been talking so much about? Or is this just scaremongering by the government, in which case you're damaging your own work to get everyone back into the workplace?
We're not going through a second wave at the moment. We're taking robust measures to try and make sure that we are indeed able to avoid that scenario. There are clearly areas of the country where there have been some upticks in the outbreak rate, and that's why we've taken the action we have in Greater Manchester, East Lancashire and West Yorkshire, and indeed in Leicester before that. And we can't apologise for doing that. It's what's necessary at this time. But if we want to make sure that we don't see slippage, and of course the data is fast changing and this virus has not gone away, then we do need to make sure that we all continue to follow the rules that are in place for our own protection.
Okay.
There is the risk of a second wave, and we shouldn't be in any way blasé about that.
Just finally, let's talk about this colleague of yours, a Tory MP, a former government minister who has been accused of rape and coercive control and other sexual offences by a former female parliamentary aide. She says that she spoke to the chief whip, Mark Spencer, way back in April, and that no action was taken. He has not been suspended. He has not been named. Is that the right decision?
Well, we obviously all feel very deeply for the victims of all sexual crimes. It's a terrible set of allegations, and we take it with the utmost seriousness. In the end, as you were discussing just before I came on, this is only at the stage of an allegation having been made. There's no charge as yet been issued at all. It's very important to be clear about that. We do believe in the principle of following due process, and this is something that is in the hands of the criminal justice system. Obviously, the government will respond should matters progress further. There is no question that the Chief Whip is a good guy, and he knows full well the seriousness of this situation.
Well, this is the rather bizarre situation that MPs in the House of Commons voted in 2016 to change the procedure in relation to the automatic naming of arrested MPs. That was the case, but again, not actually people being named and if they've not been charged. There was only one dissenting voice, and that was John Mann, now Lord Mann. Those are the likes of Jess Phillips and others, and even some female MPs who are criticising the decision. Many of them actually voted for that measure. They were in the House in 2016 or didn't object to that measure, that rule being changed. It is not necessarily a matter for the discretion of the Chief Whip at this point. This is simply a matter for the law, which is parliamentary procedure, which is the law, which is that MPs should not be named in these scenarios unless or until further action is taken.
I think I have to say that is the right balance. It is obviously a very sensitive and difficult one, and never more so than in the case of accusations of this nature, which are particularly horrible. Look, no one is going to defend anyone who's committed a crime of this nature, but it is really important to remember these are allegations. It's an immensely serious situation. I'm obviously very limited in what I can say, and what we all should say, I think, at a point where the police and the CPS will need to do their work.
Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. Talk Radio.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Online, on DAB, and on the Talk Radio app. Talk Radio.
Right now, let's turn our attention to the furlough scheme. 9 million people were put on the furlough scheme at the cost of many, many tens of billions of pounds. Good news is we're now down to 4.5 million people on that scheme as it begins to wind down, with employers having to pay some share of that. And at the end of October, it's all over. But should people be getting back to work long before the furlough scheme ends? Well, certainly one man who thinks so is the Pimlico Plumbers boss, Charlie Mullins, who was told staff last week, back at work on Friday or you face the sack. Well, let's talk to Charlie Mullins, who joins us right now. Good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning, Julia.
Good morning. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. You get quite a lot of stick for being very open about your political views, and you've had it over the years. I think you get used to it. You're a self-made millionaire. You're very outspoken in your views. And yet you've got quite a lot of stick for saying, well, back at work or you face the sack. Why do you think that it was right to tell your staff that? Why was it right to tell your staff that?
Well, I just think I'm being honest, and I don't want to string them along, and I don't want anybody else to abuse or milk the furlough system. I think time's up on it. It was a lifeline which was much needed, and we've got to draw a line under it at some stage. And I said from day one that, you know, I'm not prepared to pay somebody to sit at home and do nothing.
Simple as that. And do you think there were members of your own staff who were abusing or milking the system?
Undoubtedly, undoubtedly. You know, these are the same people that are telling other work colleagues, you know, I love this furlough, 80% for doing nothing. These are the same people that go on the beach at Bournemouth, barbecues, bars, all the bits and pieces, but they come up with, you know, well, they don't even say I'm scared to go to work. They just say, this suits me much better than going to work.
Are you kidding me? They're even honest with you. They're actually happy to say.
Well, they're not honest with me. They're not honest with me. They're honest with their other work colleagues. You know, you've got to be mad going to work. You know, I love this. I love it. You know, and as I say, you know, you see the Bournemouth Beach. I mean, how many of them people was on furlough? Well, you know, how many of them are all of a sudden scared to go to work, but they're happy to go to the beach?
No, the majority of your 450 workers did return to their jobs, but some 30 members were of staff took voluntary redundancy or were fired. Were they the 30 you predicted?
Was they what? Sorry.
Were they the 30 that you predicted? I mean, when you were looking at the staff that you thought were abusing the system or milking the system, were they the ones that you thought they were?
We've made about 10 people redundant. We've managed to part company with about 10 people that said they didn't want to be coming back to work or some other nonsense they come up with. And about another 10 people have gone elsewhere on the basis that, you know, I don't think we have a future with. They don't have a future with Pimlico Plumbers. But again, I'm only being honest. What's the point in telling them all in October you haven't got a job? You know, I know one company, and I think it's so wrong, they're going to put 120 people off when the furlough finishes. So that's wrong. They're taking government money. We've all got to pay for that. You know, I just think it's wrong. Why should they, you know, a boss's job is to be honest with his workers. And if they're going to work together and continue, then they need to make them plans. If they're not going to continue, then I think they need to be honest with people.
You took a lot of stick. You've pointed out that actually, you know, you did have to keep working. You've always said, you know, plumbing is the fourth emergency service. People still need it. I needed a plumber during lockdown, and a lot of people still do with their problems. In fact, a lot of people would like to have been able to get hold of a plumber during that lockdown period when they were far few and far between. But you said you did actually look after the 150 who did come into the office to keep things going. What did you do for those 150 who did brave the office throughout the lockdown?
Okay, it's not quite true. 150. Look, we have about 450 people. All the engineers are self-employed, and they carried on working.
Yep.
Carrying out an essential service. About 160 people are in their head office. Two-thirds of them walked out within 5 minutes of knowing they're going to get 80% to sit at home and do nothing. The ones that continued and worked the company through the crisis. We gave them £20 a day bonus, which can be obviously 140 quid. A lot of them work 7 days. We laid on hot and cold food for them, all free, all day long and all night. We laid on free parking for them. And when I say the virus pretty much come to an end, we also give them a £200 voucher for Langham's restaurant, each individual. So, you know, they've helped the company out. I believe we've looked after them and that's what I was prepared to do, that anybody that was comfortable enough to carry on working. We put all the corona health and safety issues in place immediately. We have a full-time health and safety officer. We've got very large offices, which allows us to do social distancing. We've geared up our engineers with masks, gloves, sanitizer, footwear, sinks in their van, and was even making sure the safety of customers by ringing them. And they would open the door for us, we'd go in and do the job, and they don't even have to meet us. But and also, I have to add, Julia, we've been carrying out free emergency work for the NHS service for ever since the coronas. And, you know, that's been going down very well as far as helping out people that have been doing the wonderful job they've been doing, saving people.
Yeah, I mean, it all sounds really good stuff here. I mean, are you always surprised at the backlash to employers like you who do, I mean, let's be honest, just tell it like it is. And as you say, the big fear has been that an awful lot of the people on the furlough scheme are people who are not going to be returning to work. Those jobs don't exist. The employers know those jobs don't exist. Maybe no one's told the employees yet. But as you say, we, the rest of us, the taxpayers, will be picking up the extra bill for that.
Well, of course we are. The Chancellor's already talking about claiming in $2 billion from online online sales. Why should people, because they shop online or they can't get out to shop or it suits them better, why should they have to pay for people to sit at home and do nothing? It's wrong. I think we should stop the furlough system immediately and start a system up again for the genuine people that their industry can't go back to work or they genuinely have got underlying health issues. We need to stop. Of course, we've got to look after the people that are genuine, but you know, we also got to start promoting people back into the workplace. We need people to, you know, spend their money on public transport, on taxis. We need people to go in and buy a coffee. We need people to use shops and pubs and restaurants. You know, we need to get the economy going again. And if everybody sits at home, the unemployment figures are going to be absolute colossal. And I honestly believe that a lot of people will never work again if they continue with this furlough unnecessary.
Have you been working throughout this, though? Because you're in Spain in your villa. That's where you're talking to us from. Very nice it looks, too. Some people are saying, well, hold on a minute. You're having a go at these guys. But there you are in your swanky villa in Spain.
Yeah, Julia, you're totally right. But hold on, I'm not having a go at these people. I'm being honest. I'm being compassionate.
Now, can I stop you a second? Because I know we've got you on video and your video's just gone all fuzzy. I don't know whether you've pressed something because I know a lot of people are going to be watching this on social media afterwards.
No. OK, sorry. Something went wrong there. What was the question?
So you're telling everyone they need to be back in the office. And yet there you are in your swanky villa in Spain. You're not back in the office.
OK, and what's wrong with that? I didn't get the villa for sitting at home doing nothing. And by the way, I got stuck in Spain because of the coronavirus. I also have business out in Spain now. And the moment I can get back, I'll be there. I've been to work throughout the coronavirus. I've been non-stop. So, you know, if they want to slag me off because I've got a nice villa, that's up to them.
Oh, but I'm not joining in that. I wish I was in my villa in Spain, to be honest with you.
But what I'm trying to say, I'm not hiding that fact. You know, I'm not saying, wow, look at me. I'm working every day here and we're keeping the company going. And I appreciate the people that are also working with me. But, you know, I don't need to defend the fact that, you know, I've worked hard and I have a nice villa. And as I say, I've got stuck here because of the corona situation. I've either got to go back and do 14 days there or wait, hopefully, till this bypasses and then go back.
Across the UK, online, on DAB and on your smart speaker, Talk Radio.
Well, let's talk to Kate Nichols, who's Chief Executive of UK Hospitality, representing that industry. Kate, did Eat Out to help out your members?
The initial signs are positive that it did start to help people out, that we had quite a few good levels of bookings, lots of walk-ins, and that people did seem to take advantage of the offer yesterday. So we hope that that continues.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially, you know, a Monday night, I mean, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, the three quietest nights in the restaurants. I can remember waitressing and managing actually a restaurant at one point in my late teens. I don't know how it ended up that way, but, you know, there were some Monday nights when you'd lay up the whole place, you had all the food ready and not a single customer, whereas only two nights before you'd been absolutely packed with a queue out the door. Is there a worry, though, as some eatery owners have suggested, that you're just going to get a load of business on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, but then you're going to see less business on a Friday and a Saturday, and so overall you're not going to do any better?
Well, I think that is always the concern, but I think with COVID at the moment, more people are pre-booking because there are restrictions on space and because tables sell out on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Yeah. So I do think you will see some additional trade coming through in those quieter periods of the week as people are tempted out. And I think particularly the case for those customers who haven't tried going out yet, just over half haven't tried to go back out and eat and drink out. They are going to want to look actively for a quieter period. So we very much hope that it will build confidence amongst that group of customers and they will come out in addition to the people who are comfortable coming out on a busy time.
Yeah, I mean, that's the crucial thing, isn't it? So, I mean, a lot of people go, oh, no, don't go out. I can remember on the 4th of July, the number of people, I tweeted out a picture of me sitting outside the pub. I was actually with my brother and his girlfriend and my husband and my sister. And I was sitting, you know, way away from other people, sitting open air, no risk at all. And they, you know, say no more risk than just generally walking about in daily life. And some people were saying, oh, that's so risky. That's a terrible thing. There are lots of people who just think that you're going to be very, very crowded. And they've seen the footage of, say, you know, Soho in central London, where people were cheek by jowl. That is not the case in most restaurants and bars and pubs. It's all very sensible. People are seated at the table. It's all very calm. People aren't, you know, at risk to each other. And it's a lot of this is just about not just boosting people's confidence. Go out on a quiet night, it'll be safe. But also getting people back into the habit of going out.
I think that is the most important thing at the moment is people, if you've been locked down, if you've been stuck at home and you haven't tried going back out, there is that first step that people have to take where they're unsure and they don't know what it's going to be like. And what we do find is that when people do come back out, and as I say, just over 40% have returned over the last month, they find that they're hugely reassured, very positive response to the COVID secure guidelines and protocols we've put in place, and they come back time and time again. So I think this is about getting people over that first hurdle, yeah, getting them back into the habit, as your last caller said, you know, giving them a little bit of an incentive that it is cheaper to eat out. Most importantly, then, they realise it's not so bad going back into town centres, back, yes, into high streets, and other businesses will benefit too. This is not just about hospitality.
Yeah, indeed, and that's all part of getting people back to work, isn't it? It's a huge...
It is.
I mean, lots of people who've been on furlough, you know, obviously 80% of their pay, but saving a lot of money from travel. People who've been working from home. I was really aware. I was working from home for 3 solid months. My husband's still mostly working from home. And, you know, you're not paying the transport costs. You're not having to deal with, you know, the dry cleaning of the suits or whatever, if that's the sort of job you're in. You don't have to, I know, but a lot of people get tempted by the coffee on the way in, the sandwich, yeah, at lunchtime. There are lots of extra little costs. But of course, those extra little costs are what keep other people in their jobs.
Absolutely. You know, 3 million people are employed in hospitality and are dependent upon us going out, eating and drinking out. And we had got into the habit of going out very frequently, particularly if, yeah, we're a commuter in the office. So every little helps in terms of encouraging people to return. And we do have to learn, as the scientists are telling us and as the politicians are telling us, this is going to be around for quite a bit longer. So we're going to have to get used to living with these restrictions and making the best of them and the most of them. So this scheme is about kickstarting that recovery, getting people used to taking that first step back out and hopefully getting the economy moving again.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're going in and out on your phone line a little bit. I'm not quite sure what that problem is, but just finally I want to ask you, we spoke to the Resolution Foundation a bit earlier. You've done some research into the numbers on furlough. We know 9 million on furlough at the highest point. Big concern. That was way, way more than the Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor, expected to be on furlough. Now we know less than 4.5 million. So half of those people have returned. Shops have reopened. Obviously now restaurants and bars, a lot of them have reopened. Again, not in many city centres, just in local areas, they've actually been able to get their stuff back. Are you concerned about the furlough scheme winding down and finishing completely when some restaurants and bars just haven't been able to come back and may not for some time?
I think that remains a huge concern. I mean, the furlough was critical in supporting hospitality jobs. We had 2.8 million people in hospitality successfully furloughed. That was about 87% of our workforce. We've brought back over half of those, but we still have large swathes of the industry closed by legislation. Bowling, hotel events, weddings, nightclubs, music venues, all still closed, all facing additional costs. And there's a very real fear that some jobs will be lost unless that we get additional help or support, yeah, or unless we get those businesses open more quickly.
Online, on DAB and on the Talk Radio app. Talk Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Julia Hartley Brewer Daily. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe and give me a good review. And don't forget to catch me on the Talk Radio Breakfast Show every weekday from 6:30 until 10.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.